Welcome to episode 37 of Forest Focus. I'm your host, Paul Wade, with the Regional Public Affairs and Communications Office. We're going to try something a little different. Here is our first video podcast. Join us as we take part in Cone Camp. Here are video clips from the camp, which took place in Yreka and at the Sierra Pacific Industries Orchard in Gazelle. In a nutshell, that doesn't sound right if we are talking about cones. Okay, in a seed shell, anyway, Cone Camp 2023 was a collaborative partnership between the USDA Forest Service, Cal Fire, and American Forests. The training, which is 2 days, a day in the classroom and a day in the field, would give attendees a chance to network with others and learn techniques from industry experts. On the agenda is cone phenology, monitoring and collection techniques, seed needs assessment, cone collection planning, contracting and coordinating with agencies, reporting crop sightings, field logistics, safety, and more. The camp was offered in 4 locations in California between May and August: Mountain Home Demonstration State Forest near Porterville and the Sequoia National Forest, Blodgett Forest Research Station near Georgetown and the El Dorado National Forest, Yreka and Sierra Pacific Industries Orchard in Gazelle near Mount Shasta, and at the California Conservation Corps Greenwood Center. During the training, we spoke with Shelley Villalobos from American Forests. Shelley is the manager of the California Reforestation Pipeline Partnership. Tell us about Cone Camp.
This is the first year that Cone Camp has its new name. It was piloted last year in 2022 as a cone survey training that was planned and delivered by Cal Fire, Forest Service, and American Forests in the early stages and early phases of the Reforestation Pipeline Partnership being formalized. And so this year is really the stepping into that partnership more fully, being able to expand our outreach and communications, our delivery of resources and readings, and really have it be organized and in order to grow the number of cone surveyors out there, getting their eyes on the trees, reporting what they're seeing so that we can be tracking, ideally, more and more viable cone crops to collect.
So what we're looking at here, right? We have this tree, decent crop, right? Like I said, it doesn't have a bunch of clusters, but it does have a bunch of cone on it, you know, versus like this one over here, right? This one is loaded at the top. It has.
How did this cone camp get started?
This was a dually funded, match funded grant by U.S. Forest Service Region 5 and Cal Fire and their Wildfire Resilience Department. And it was as a result of a recommendation by the Governor's Task Force on Fire and Forest Resilience, had a sub-working group on reforestation. And that working group found that that working group was challenged with identifying the true all lands reforestation opportunity from the recent fire years of 2019 through 21, and found that there was about 1.5 million acres of land that's at high risk of forest loss or conversion to non-forest vegetation types. And they made the recommendation that, hey, we need a platform to continue experimenting, researching, collaborating around all things that have to do with the reforestation pipeline in California, because we don't have the pace or scale that we need to address 1.5 million acres in anything close to, you know, within even our lifetimes at the rate that we're going and have been going in recent decades. So their recommendation was to create this partnership where the agencies say, we can't do this alone, and we want to collaborate, and we want to invite others, including the private industry and tribal entities and National Park Service and BLM and all the other agencies who are involved with forestry, and say, let's create a platform where we can collaborate in an ongoing fashion, hence the genesis of the Reforestation Pipeline Cooperative. And so that was the first real anchor program of the partnership.
Also, if you're trying to identify something out in the field that doesn't have cones on it, that makes it easy to see what it is, you can look at the fascicles and see how many needles are there. So sugar pine 5 and ponderosa pine is 3. And both of the pine species, those are 2-year cones. So
what do you mean when you say we have 14 days to save the forest?
Well, we're here at a time when the green trees are disappearing. They're going up in smoke along with the fires, and the seed is going with them. And so as we have higher severity burns and larger fires, we're losing the genetic diversity along with those big fires. And so we are at a place and a time when we need to capture the viable seed that is being produced on the forests in order to enable future reforestation efforts, because trees are adapted to the climates where they are found. And so with that, there is a lot of specificity, geographic specificity, around when a tree will produce seed, viable seed through its cones, and how often it does that, and when that seed gets ripe. And so the 14 days to save the forest comment is really, or the soundbite rather, is really about it's such that when the seed is ripe, but before it naturally falls and disperses, if we're going to collect it and store it in the seed bank, we have a window, a short window of the season when the seed is ripe, but it hasn't yet fallen from, because the cones will have opened. And so oftentimes there's just a few days in which you can climb up the trees and collect those cones.
Cones from each of the trees that we're thinking of grabbing from, is probably 3 or so trees. I'm gonna mix them up, I'm gonna grab seed from all of them, and I'm gonna count 100. This is what I'm doing in the lab. And then I'm looking at the embryo for each one for the cut test.
Where is the demand for reforestation coming from?
So a lot of, I'll speak to the public lands, and then I'll speak to the private non-industrial lands. On the public lands, in 2021, with the infrastructure bill, there was an act in there called the Replant Act, which charges the Forest Service with addressing its backlog of plantable acres. So, and to do so in a timely manner. And about 1.1 million of those acres, roughly, belong to the federal government in California. And so we have a tall task for the 18 forests in California to collectively plant 1 million acres roughly in the next decade. And the current average in the past 20 years has been planting closer to 10,000 acres a year across all those forests. So we're talking about ramping up potentially 10 times. That's a lot of work to do.
So heavy crop, coastal redwood, again, not one that I'm super familiar with collecting, but we're gonna assume it's, you know, treated the same way as like incense cedar. It's gonna look like the tree's gonna fall over because all the little cones on there are just weighing it down.
This isn't just about digging a hole and burying a seed. There's more science involved.
Yeah, if we're gonna talk about it, we gotta start at the beginning, which is a mature tree producing viable seed in its cones. And there's a periodicity to that. So a tree will produce viable cones every approximately 2 to 10 years. And there's various climatic and geographic influences that determine that timing. But basically the job of a cone hunter is to, and that's an informal term, is to identify stands of trees that are starting to develop viable cones in quantity that is going to be worthwhile for collection, and then to monitor them for ripeness. So the seed needs to be collected when it is ripe and the embryo of the seed is fully developed, but before that seed has naturally dispersed. And so there's a process. So at Cone Camp, we've been talking about going from surveying, you know, running the long days in the truck along the ridgelines looking for stands of trees with potentially heavy crops of cones developing, to narrowing that down into candidate cone collections, to actually getting down sample cones, cutting them open, and monitoring the development of the embryo in that seed. And so there's lots of factors that could prevent that from being good seed. You could get, it could be bugs, it could, the tree could abort the cones because it's stressed out from drought or other factors. There could be a fire that destroys it in the meantime. And so after, if you do get to the point of having a collectible crop of cones, then you're watching it very closely towards the end of that ripeness, but before natural seed fall. And so that we can call in a climber to get up in the trees and collect those cones and then get them quickly to the nurseries for processing and storage.
So it's really fragile. We have a hard time getting any kind of storage time out of it. You know, ponderosa pine seed, fir seed, all that. If it's cleaned really well, it'll maintain its viability for 50 or more years.
Let's talk about needing partners, contractors.
Sure. So once the seed is ripe, generally a cone monitor will call in coordination with their nursery or seed bank manager. They'll call in climbers to who are contractors. Basically, because of the seasonality of it, it's not year-round work. Again, it's a short window of the year when the seed is ripe but not yet fallen and thus collectible. It tends to be, you know, people who are rock climbers are also great tree climbers, arborists, and they are able to come in and collect that seed.
The bag to pollinate the flower. And then you, of course, seal that hole up. And then once the cones, they dug first, start upright, right, when they're flowers, as soon as they get pollinated, they start turning down.
Wade Bell, the seed bank manager at the Placerville Nursery, part of the U.S. Forest Service's Pacific Southwest region, also joined us to answer some questions. You mentioned a loss of skill set or a generational loss and a need to get that back. Please explain.
Correct. Yeah. And you're right. That's what we were talking about was, you know, the needs for cone collection, everything during when, you know, the Forest Service and private industry, there was a higher timber target demand. So the need for replant, you know, the need for planting and cone collection was there. And that's why, you know, this, like I said, the cone collection is nothing new. It's the knowledge drop off as the timber targets and everything, the timber industry kind of, shrank quite a bit. You know, the need wasn't there, and there was that kind of knowledge dropped as, you know, less and less was being done. People retire. That knowledge base eventually gets almost lost. And now we've had all of these, you know, uncharacteristically large stand-replacing wildfires, and we realized that, you know, natural regeneration is not going to cut it. There's just not enough seed zone, you know, there's not enough seed left in, you know, through these fires to reforest, you know, natural regeneration. So if we need to replant it, you know, we have to get the seed. So now we have this big ramp up with cone collection, and that's the great thing about Cone Corps and the cone camp that's going on here, right, is not only are we bringing all these people together, but because we're talking about sharing, right, we're talking about this being very, open source and kind of, you know, breaking barriers of, you know, this isn't just Forest Service side of things, this isn't just state side of things, you know, we're really sharing, is to make sure that we all speak the same language, right? So that way when we're sharing information, you know, there's no break in communication, right? If we're all speaking the same lingo, things happen much more smoothly. And that's one of the really nice things about this cone camp, is to make sure everybody that already has this, you know, everybody has this drive and want to be here. Now let's get everybody to speak the same language to keep everything moving smoothly.
So we water this with drip, we fertilize it. This year it was 400 pounds an acre of 1620, I think, broadcast. In here we're due for a soil and foliage sample.
Who can get into cone collection reporting and monitoring?
So citizen scientists and foresters alike can make a valuable contribution of data while they're out working and playing in the woods. if they see a crop that looks good, they can essentially tip off the seed bank managers, who will then be able to deploy, you know, cone surveyors, trained cone surveyors. So even if you're not a trained cone surveyor, but you spot a crop that looks good, and you've got some basic reference visuals, which we have some available to them, then anyone can submit this data. I mean, people who like bird watching might find that they really enjoy cone watching.
But now, for those people that are, you know, just interested, that are, you know, already part of kind of in that group of, you know, not necessarily forestation, but, you know, natural resources and stuff like that. The very first, I'd say the first place to go is kind of at the higher level is go to the one of the reforestation pipeline partnership cooperatives that happen in Williams, the quarterly ones. You kind of get a sense of, you know, what's being, that's kind of the broad, a lot of the stakeholders, are present at that one. Get on the mailing list, and then if you're still interested, you know, and you want to be out there, boots on the ground for that survey for cone collections, you know, then you get set up for, you know, 2024's cone camp, right, to get in there. And that's really kind of the, you know, I would say, agency standpoint, and you know, this is kind of the push that we're making for, you know, kind of the in and getting the experience, you know, on the broad spectrum. Like I said earlier, you know, we're all trying to speak the same language. So this is really the most appropriate and fast track way to get in. And it makes it a lot easier to do it this way. You have a group, I think Scott, and I think anybody here that's done this more than a couple years that have done cone collection, it's a tough thing to get good at, you know, without any other help. It takes years of practice, it takes years of mistakes,
mentorship,
and yeah. If you don't have that on the forest, because it's not there yet, you know, this is the avenue in, and, you know, building connections and resources and finding out where to get the help and learning that language that everybody in here is speaking. You know, I mean, we were given the presentations yesterday. I was talking to Shelley from American Forest going, you know, there's a lot of people in this audience that have had more years of experience cone collecting than me as, you know, the presenter up here. And that's great that they're coming to learn. And it's also good as a presenter too, because, you know, I can get other opinions, because a lot of stuff is, you know, what works for one person might not necessarily work for the other. But this, I'd say, for bringing people in and learning, this is the fast track and the easiest way to do it. And, you know, kind of alleviating some of those barriers and hardships that some of us, you know, that started this beforehand had to go through.
And so when you're out in the woods, you want to do it by yourself, you got several options. You can become a climber and climb a tree and grab a sample yourself. You can contract out and get a climber, not to collect all the cones, this is before cone collection, but just go up there, grab a sample for you, several samples. If you're doing that, you're paying for that, you might as well have them grab like 8 cones.
What are some of the tools of the trade and possible career paths?
Oh, it's not just binoculars. You've got to have a whole tool bag. You've got to have, cone collection and surveys are a great job for an active scientist, I would say. And by that I mean physically active. You got to want to be outside in the elements, on the forest, and you also need to have your applied science at the ready in your brain. And so you're going to have your seed cutting tool to get, you know, that surgical precision once you've cut the face of the cone open, and so that you can inspect the inside of that seed as it develops. These are cone face cutters, and so they are intended to help you slice along the longitudinal axis of a cone to open it up and see if that cone is developing viable seed inside of it. The kit. So you're gonna need a slingshot to be able to get sample cones down. It's not just any slingshot like your 10-year-old's camping toy, but more like
bird.
This thing is, you know, 7 feet long and has a lot of torque to it. So you've got to be able to, you know, use that effectively. There is a history of people using shotguns to shoot cones out of the trees, and that was at one point the most effective method. I think the recommended methods now are the slingshot and really a glorified potato gun that does pressurized air to shoot a beanbag that'll get you a cone down to sample.
With your climbing rope. And you can use the big shot to do that, or you can use the AFTA as well. Most contractors I've seen, and most people I've seen, tend to prefer this. It's more forgiving, it's safer, and honestly, it's kind of funner too, and it's...
Scott Kolpak, a geneticist with the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Southwest region, joined us to answer some questions. What does Sierra Pacific Industries bring to this cone camp and as a industry resource?
You know, the beauty of this from, you know, sitting from a geneticist point of view and all the development, you know, kind of in our field is, you know, we're coming to like a very, like a working, very successful seed orchard. And the public seed orchards to differing degree did not continue in their development and are not, they're kind of more, you know, they're there, there's some of them. They're more a little bit less managed. So coming here, you know, it brings exposure to, you know, the broader audience of where we should be going. And using a seed orchard is our best bet to have really diverse genetic materials. It takes it out of the forest in terms of having fire, you know, big fires come in and burn out that resource. And you're going to get really big, reliable seed crops quickly in terms of like you can just keep coming back every 2-3 years and recollect and you know and get that crop out. So it's a good, really good alternative to doing wildland collections and should be done more in our public agencies.
All of these things that help us get rid of cone pieces, get rid of all of the stuff that we don't want, so that we end up with something like this, right? You're still going to have some that might end up with a wing or two, but for the most part, we're aiming for a purity of like 99, or you're never going to get 100. So it's usually like 99 is our target percent purity. But before we do that, we do non-destructive tests. So whenever we get a lot at L.A. Moran, we do an X-ray. Basically, it gives us a baseline of what the actual seed lot looked like, how we would consider processing it, and it's also a good way for us to kind of calibrate some of our machines. We use air separators during a portion of our upgrading. So upgrading is just cleaning the seed, and this helps us calibrate it. But for every lot, we take an initial X-ray. It's non-destructive, so the embryo's fine. You're not really causing any harm.
I guess let's go a little bit advanced here. Thoughts on assisted population migration versus species migration?
So in the what we've, with climate change happening so rapidly, certainly the public agencies are definitely feeling like, you know, we need to consider, we need to not even consider, but we, the only way for them, you know, populations to keep adapted to the warming climate is to use assisted population migration, which is the movement of within a species. It's the movement of a source population that may be adapted to a hotter place, and if you collect seed there, and now that climate profile's moved somewhere else, that's a very good adapted fit. It's, and we might say it's a climate-informed seed sourcing. So the climate is matching source seed planting site, and it's a good, very scientific approach to go ahead and move and keep up with the changing climate. And what we want to be careful about is there's pretty good public acceptance for population assisted migration. You're just moving a species within its existing species range. There's not many downfalls to be worrying about. I mean, if a Douglas fir's south or lower elevation, and then it's the same Douglas fir as north and higher elevation, you know, it's just a different source, and there's less risk there. But we're really careful of that, to be very kind of stay away, at least for now, with the assisted species migration. I mean, at some, and that's like moving a species from, you know, they all have a range, they start and stop. You know, there's certain species in California, like Coulter pine, they're not in Oregon, you know, would be one example. And, you know, that climate of for Coulter pine is probably in Southern Oregon now, but there's a bit more risks that if we introduce Coulter pine, say, into Oregon, it may fill an adaptive niche and grow too rapidly or bring in a pathogen or something. So for now, we're kind of going slow and steady and not doing any assisted species migration. Although, frankly, though, climate change is going to get to that point where we're going to need to think a little bigger.
Two very packed days of information. I could have shared more, but like the organizers said, if you want to know more and get involved, then get out here. I, for one, I have to try my hand at the slingshot and the potato gun. They sound fun. Thanks to Shelley, Wade, Scott, and everyone at the camp. To learn more, click on the links in the show's description page, and of course, follow their social accounts. Thanks for listening, and if you're interested in sharing or listening to more episodes, search Forest Focus Podcast, or look for us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have questions or suggestions for a show, email us at sm.fs.r5ffpodcast@usda.gov. Until next time, enjoy your public lands. Please remember to recreate responsibly, know before you go, and learn what you can do to prevent wildfires. Take care.
Come.